Charlotte.
And I'm Helly, and welcome to Growth in Progress, the podcast where we have open and honest conversations about things that aren't usually discussed, but that can help us all to grow.
In each episode, we spend some time catching up and sharing something we've loved recently, and then we go on to discuss a topic that's really relevant to right now. The sort of things that a lot of people are often thinking about, but we don't necessarily discuss out in the open. If you enjoy this episode, please don't forget to go and listen to the other episodes and also hit subscribe on whichever platform you are listening to us on. So how are you doing? We made it to the end of the week. It is Friday when we're recording this, and I feel like we deserve a big Aperol this week.
Do you know what? It's funny you say that, because as soon as I finish recording, Mum has told me that she's going to have a jug of Pimm's ready, and I cannot wait.
Oh my God, I had a Pimm's last night. Now, for those of us who are in relationships with, or just have people in our lives who aren't team Pimm's, you can buy individual tins of Pimm's. And this is what I did last summer.
Is Alex not team Pimm's?
He hates it.
Oh my God.
I know. If anyone else is with the kind of animal that doesn't like Pimm's, then there is a solution. It's the individual tinnies. They're a godsend because they're perfectly mixed. Put all your fruit in. I got my Pimm's to watch a bit of Wimbledon with, but I didn't have that, you know, because it's such a faff to make a whole jug and then it goes flat and, oh, Pimm's is the best.
I think our family would just get through it at a rate that's justifying the jug. That sounds really bad. I promise we don't have a problem.
I want to come and stay with you guys and have Pimm's, please.
Okay, let's do that. Oh, for the tennis final this weekend. Oh, I'm so excited.
It is a good weekend of sport. It's coming home.
I'm not going to say is it, because I don't want to be the pessimist here.
I wonder if actually for all of our international listeners, that might not mean anything. In the UK, when England play football and we do well, everyone just likes to say, it's coming home.
That was beautiful. But you are actually very right, because Taylor sent me something the other day from the UK Reddit thread, and he sent it to me in a really weird context. And it said, football's coming home. And I was like, do you know what that means? He was like, no, I was just laughing at the bit below that. And I was like, okay, I need to send you a link to this song. So I sent him the YouTube link to the original song, like Three Lions. And let's just say it all made a lot more sense to him after that. So yeah, international listeners will probably not understand that.
We'll put a link in the show notes so you can go and listen to the classic song. Have you heard the Atomic Kitten song?
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about it.
I love it. I love that they've done a remake. I loved Gareth Southgate as well. So I love
Gareth Southgate, to be fair.
I think he's a great guy. If you are a fan, I'd recommend listening to Fern Cotton's Happy Place episode with him, because it was brilliant.
Did I?
Really insightful.
I can't remember if I recommended it or I might have recommended it in my newsletter, but the High Performance podcast had an episode with Gareth Southgate on as well. And they've also got a special series with various like big hitters in the football world. And his episode was all about being an emotionally intelligent leader. Really interesting. Additional recommendation for you there this week, but that's really worth giving a listen.
Really good. I mean, I do feel like we need to address the fact that it has come home since 1966.
66.
Yeah, it has come home since then, because
the women's
football team have done it. Proving once again that women can do anything men can do, and they can do it better. But the male football team and the excitement that surrounds it, that hasn't happened for a while. So it is quite exciting, isn't it? Like Sunday night, we can all have a bit of patriotism in a way that isn't like terrifying.
I'm honestly convinced though that me saying, so I've said every single match throughout this whole thing that we're going to lose, and we've obviously won, well, apart from the Scotland one, but we've won every single one. We've not lost. So I will maintain that we're going to lose, because I think it's a good omen.
But then I'm the opposite. I know so little about football that I'm like, of course it's coming home. Like, of course it is. So I feel like between us,
maybe
there's a hope in hell.
Evened it out.
Who knows? God only knows. As if we've spoken about football for nearly 5 minutes.
I know, the irony, because I actually hate football, but...
Yeah, but then I did find the other night when I was watching the match, I did have a great amount of respect for them as athletes, because Ian Sterling, oh my God, that's the Love Island guy, Jesus Christ. Oh, it's been a long week. Raheem Sterling, he was amazing. Like, he just went for the whole time. And I thought, from an athletics point of view, you do have to be so fit.
I did say this the other day to my brother, because when I've watched football before, I think it's just so boring and I can't see how they're worth the money. But watching them play this time, there's been some moves and there's been like the skill. I've actually seen skill. And for the first time, I think I've appreciated it. I've appreciated the skill that it takes to be at that level and to play for 90 minutes, whereas I don't think I had that before.
No, it was only when I started listening to Flintoff Savage and the Ping Pong that I really started to understand how much physical effort goes into it, which I know sounds a bit naive, and a lot of people, if you're football fans, are probably thinking, oh my God, of course it is. But I think sometimes the way it's portrayed, it's not. But this time, I really saw it. And who was it? Harry Kane? Yeah. Is he the guy who kicked the goal?
Yes.
He did the penalty.
Yeah.
And it almost...
Is it Harry? Is it Harry?
I think it is Harry Kane.
Okay, cool.
Top quality football content over here from us. But when he kicked it and it didn't go in, and then he got it in, but he did not for a second flinch. Like, he stayed in that mindset the whole time. And I just thought...
Yeah, the follow-up was insane.
I was like, that is the perfect showcase of resilience. And I thought, that's a brilliant... It's brilliant for this week's podcast topic. So
it is. If you want a little insight into how much I'm not like a football person, this story still does the rounds, and it happened to me when I was 7 or 8 years old.
Oh my God, I've never heard this.
I still am quite sporty, but throughout school and university, I was on like every sports team going. And when I was at primary school, I played lacrosse, I swam, I did triathlon, I was a cross country runner, I was on the school lacrosse team. I played all of these sports. And one day in the women's...
We would not have been friends.
But one day, the girls' football team had a load of illnesses and people couldn't play, and they had a game. So because I was in like every other team, they said, let's put Helena in, which was an error. And we went to this, it was an away game, and I was on the, I was about to call it the court. I was on the court. I was on the pitch. And the head teacher was there, and he's like, Helena, just kick it, keep running towards the goal. And someone kicked the ball at me, and it rolled up to my feet, and I was standing still, and I looked down at it, and I turned to the head teacher, and I burst into tears, and I said, what do I do? And anyway, the other team got the ball, and they won. And this is how I've known from a very young age that football's not my sport.
What do I do?
It was overwhelming panic.
Oh my God, I don't mean to be laughing at 7-year-old you, but I can just picture it all.
I was just so used to knowing what to do in sport, except for football.
Oh my God, that is amazing.
Yeah, and I remember it so clearly because it was probably up there in one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. Still.
What do I do?
On that note.
Oh, on that note. Should we talk about something we know a bit better than football? I think it'll be for everyone's sake. What's your recommendation for the week?
So definitely more up my street than football. My recommendation this week is a book. And I finally got back into reading after being in a bit of a book slump for, I think, about 2 months. I've just really not got into anything. And I'm still being served ads by Bloomsbury, despite not having worked there for 2 years. So this is a slightly maybe biased recommendation, but it's Leave the World Behind by Ruman Alam, and it's absolutely blown me away. It was so terrifyingly unsettling, even though nothing scary happens. The way it's written, I felt nervous. Like, I read it at night and I was like lying in bed and I felt unsettled and like on edge just because the writing was so incredible. So it's set in the States, and it's a family who, they live in New York, but they very like middle class family, and they've gone away to Long Island for a family vacation, and they've got their vacation rental, and it's this very nice house with a pool, all of that. They're having a great time, and then one evening a couple turn up at the door and they claim to be the owners of the house, and they've left New York in a hurry because they claim that the lights just went out. Like, the whole of New York, the lights were going out, something was wrong, all the power went out, there was no radio, there's no TV, no one, like, they can't get a phone signal. So they didn't know where else to go. So they came to their house, which was obviously being let out to this family. And it's absolutely fascinating and quite, I was trying to find the word for it and I looked it up and it's prescient. And it's, that's about like having knowledge of events before they take place. And the whole book is basically makes you realize how terrifyingly fragile our existence is. Like you could be on the verge of an environmental disaster, like a political disaster, a nuclear disaster, a meteor strike, anything like that. You could be on the edge of it. And this book just shows how reliant we are on technology to stay connected and kind of navigate through lives, because they lose contact with everything and everyone, and their phones don't work and the TV's off and the radio's off and they don't know what's happened. And it's just fascinating to see how the characters evolve and relate to each other, and kind of that they're holed up in this house together and they have to get along and they have to work out what to do. And I'm not going to spoil it, but the way that it ended was like frustrating but amazing as well. I'm harping on about it so much, but it was absolutely amazing. I really recommend giving it a read. And it's only like 250 pages, so it's not too long either.
That sounds really interesting. I mean, I probably would have nightmares and feel stressed for the whole thing, but that does sound really interesting and very like timely as well. Is it a new release?
Yeah, it came out, I think, at the end of last year. It's actually being made into a movie. It's very like Handmaid's Tale, like almost apocalyptic type thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, really fast. Just the writing is amazing. I really hope that they kind of capture that same unnerving kind of quality when it gets made into a movie.
Nice.
What's your recommendation this week?
Completely different.
Again, it was last week.
Yeah, so I've actually got a small business recommendation this week. And I'm not sure we've ever had one of those on the podcast before. I might be forgetting. I
think we did a few. We did like a series of them, I think, for a while.
Yes, maybe we did. I take it back. But this one is called Glass and Wick. And some people might have seen them on Instagram. They're a small, independent, luxury home fragrance brand. They're based in Nottingham. Exactly. I knew you'd love that. And it's a young couple, and about 18 months ago, during the pandemic, they decided, screw it, let's give it a go. They started making soy-based candles on the side, and then it's now their full-time job. And they've got a team of four people who work with them, and everything is cruelty-free and vegan. Everything is completely recyclable. It's completely zero waste. The product itself is beautiful, like really, really competitive price point with other luxury brands in the market, but I think it surpasses like your Diptyques, your Jo Malones, all of those, because the burn on the candles is so much more even. It doesn't have that horrible black smog. The scents are incredible, and they do seasonal launches. So they've recently released all their summer scents, so I ordered they do wax melts, diffusers and candles, and I love their wax melts. And they're so affordable as well. It's like £4 for a pack of 10, and they last like, I think you get a 10-hour burn time with them.
Oh, wow.
It's really affordable. And the scents are just gorgeous. I got green fig and vetiver, which if you're a fig lover, you'll love. Tuscan tomato vine leaves. Oh my God.
Ooh.
Heavenly. Like it smells like a fresh summer's day. And then bramble row, which is like your kind of bays, blackberry and bay type scent if you're a Jo Malone Diptyque fan. And they're beautiful. And it's such a gorgeous company. Everything about it is beautiful. Their branding is stunning. It's a very thoughtful, well thought out company, and I just cannot recommend them enough. I keep recommending them to people for gifts. Alex's mum is hooked as well, and she keeps buying them for gifts. Like everyone always says how amazing they are. So if you're looking for just a nice treat for yourself or your home, I really would recommend them, because I just think it's so nice to find a company that are doing that luxury, like that luxury home fragrance kind of homeware thing so well. And doing it ethically, which I also love.
Yeah, that's amazing, because I always look for things that are made in Nottingham to give to people as gifts, especially like the family that we have abroad. I always think it's nice to have something locally, and I will absolutely be using this. I literally just looked them up just now. Every order placed is two trees planted.
Yes, I should have said that. It's so good. And when they send, so they do wax burners as well. So I think they're And they've just partnered with, I think, 4 or 5 small businesses to also sell their homeware products, which is also really nice. So, like, they're using their platform to, like, spread the love.
Mm.
But when they send anything to you, they wrap it in, like, packing peanuts, but they use the packing peanuts that are made of rice. So you can just wash them down the sink because it's just starch.
Oh, so they just dissolve.
Yeah, and they all come with a personalised, like, little handwritten note. Like, it's really, it's just really well thought out. And I've chatted with the owner a couple of times on Instagram, and she is so lovely, and their social media is just spot on. And I think it, especially now as we're coming out of the pandemic, like, it's just good to keep in mind that small businesses do still need our support. So yeah, 10 out of 10 would recommend.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to be getting something from there, definitely.
When you come down, you have to smell all the scents I've got.
Oh, I can't
they
wait.
Also do, this is a brilliant idea, this is what I got for my birthday, they do like a discovery bag of wax melts. So they're like twice the size of their normal wax melts, and you get one of like all of their core scents.
Ooh,
so you get to try
idea.
Different things out. Really lovely gift, also really lovely if you just want to try some things out. So yeah.
Amazing.
In this week's episode, we wanted to have a conversation about resilience. It's something that so many people are talking about right now, especially as we start to come out of the pandemic, and we've all been through a hell of a lot in the past 12 months. And we wanted to chat about it because resilience is such a powerful tool. It can help you so much in life, but it isn't always something that's easy to build up. And finding the balance between being emotionally intelligent, being resilient, and also not kind of wallowing or sitting in a negative place can be quite hard. And there are so many different facets to resilience that we really wanted to break that down and share some of the ways that we've found building resilience to be really valuable, and also how we did that.
Yeah, I think resilience is really interesting because I'd always seen it as a very positive thing to have. And as I've kind of grown up, and probably, to be honest, probably only over the pandemic have I really seen it as, I think it is a positive thing, and it is like a, is something that you can really build up, and it does help you navigate those tough times. But I also think that it, there's a certain point where I think it can make you a bit overly tolerant to adversity. Mm. And I think it's really interesting to look at, I don't know, the ways that we can build up resilience in a really positive way, but without feeling like it's the only way to deal with problems that we come up across in life.
I completely agree. I'd never really considered resilience to be something that could be a bad thing. And it's actually a couple of conversations I've had with people recently, and they've kind of gone down the route of, but at what point does it mean that you kind of don't take care of yourself? Because exactly that, you are too tolerant, you take too much, and you brand it in your own mind as being resilient. But actually what you're doing is you're just like locking it in a box, and you're not processing what's happening. And I think a lot of people have done that in the past year as a coping mechanism as well. It's definitely no disservice to anyone, like, especially when something really traumatic or difficult happens, it takes a lot of emotional capacity to be able to process that, and that time and that indulgence isn't necessarily something all of us have had in the past few years. So I think it's really hard to find that balance, and I can understand why you would slip into maybe just shutting up and putting up. But to the outside world, you look like you're being resilient.
Yeah, I think I always think of, I recommended it like last, probably a year ago now, the TED Talk with Dr. Lucy Hone.
Yes.
And she's actually a resilience research specialist. And she'd done that job for years, and then her young daughter was killed in a car accident. And she kind of had this realization of, okay, all of this stuff that I've been, I need to practice what I preach. Like, all of these years I've spent researching resilience. And I always think of her saying, when it comes to resilience, is what I'm doing helping or harming me?
Mm.
And I think exactly what you said there, there's a line between appearing really strong and resilient and like you're coping really well, and actually then just wallowing in, I don't want to say wallowing because that sounds like you're choosing to be negative. I think there's a point where you feel like you've almost pigeonholed yourself so much into resilience that you can struggle to get out of it.
Yeah.
Because I think resilience is great as an ability to bounce back, but if you're not bouncing back and you're just tolerating it, then it's a really heavy burden to carry.
Yeah. And I do think part of resilience is like, it's like a muscle you've got to train. You've got to do the pre-work. Like you don't know when something bad's going to happen or when there's going to be change or when it's going to be a stressful time. So you have to do the pre-work. You have to make sure that you've got tools in place where you do have a support network and you practice gratitude and you practice that mindfulness so that when things go off kilter, you sort of have that netting to catch you. And I think then when those things happen, there's a moment of choice where you can say, I'm going to use this to build up that resilience, or you almost stay stuck in that place. I'm not saying it's a conscious choice. I think often it isn't, but you do have to make a commitment to yourself to be like, I'm going to pull myself out. I'm going to carry on. And that's really difficult. And I don't think we always talk enough about that process of saying, this is not where I'm going to stay. I'm going to move.
Yeah.
And it's that whole thing. I think we talked about it last week, actually, about like an object in motion stays in motion, mm-hmm. and a static object will just stay static. Like the hardest thing is to get moving. So once you make that commitment and you make the first step, you can build that resilience. And it's not to say that it will just constantly grow. And once you're resilient everywhere. But because I think it's different for different areas of your life and different problems that you face. But once you start it and you make that commitment, you can start to push yourself out of that space and walk away from that more toxic behavior of just tolerance.
I think there is something to be said there for kind of differentiating between positive resilience and negative resilience.
Maybe that's it, actually.
Because I mean, especially at the moment, I think we are just inundated with bad news. It's on the news, it's on our phone, it's on social media. Yeah. People around us are catching COVID, people are dying, like the world is shut down. Like we are... Our stress level at the moment is, for like the past year plus, has been so dialed up that it's almost become natural for us to tune into the bad stuff. And I think maybe, obviously, you build up a tolerance to it and some sort of resilience to it, because, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one who watches the news and just kind of, I mean, sometimes I just feel like I don't feel anything anymore because it's just so normal to see bad news after bad news. And I think maybe that's where you start towing the line of like negative resilience, because you're just tolerating that kind of level of bad stuff, when actually, like you were saying then, if you can focus on the gratitude, tuning into the good stuff, like finding the benefits, hunting for those good things, I think then that is more powerful in building resilience. Like we were saying last week, reframing, positive self-talk, that's a really positive way to tie into resilience, so it's not just something that you end up stuck in and tolerating at such a high stress level for so long.
I also think it's really important to differentiate like the different ways in which you can be resilient. Like you might be someone who really struggles with change, so actually you're not very resilient to change. It's something you find really hard, but emotionally you're very resilient, and maybe you don't find it as stressful if you hear people say things about you that aren't true, or you don't worry what other people think. And there's real value to be said for kind of having that frank conversation with yourself and being like, okay, this is an area where I need to work on and do a bit more work and I don't think you necessarily become comfortable with it, but you have to take some of the fear away from it.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's more kind of differentiating when we need to show ourselves, like show our vulnerability and show ourselves compassion more than we need to be resilient.
That's really true, actually. Sometimes, because I think we also like to, as a society, switch off our emotions, think that showing your emotions is bad and you shouldn't be angry, you shouldn't be upset. And there is real value and power to be had from embracing those emotions, but I think you have to do it in a quite measured way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think maybe more emphasis is put on appearing to be resilient rather than actually being resilient. Maybe that's where we're going wrong. When I was reading stuff for this episode, there was an article, I can't remember what it was now, but there was an article saying like the percentage of Americans that are like just resilient to how horrendous their job is, because they just think that it's normal to hate your job. So they just deal with like an awful team or an awful boss or low pay, no holiday, whatever the situation is, because they just think that that's how it has to be. And then I guess that does fall into more of that category of the negative resilience, because it's not something that's serving you. I think maybe that's where that differentiation happens of, is it something, yeah, like you were saying, is it resilience that's making you stronger, or is it something that's actually just really tearing you down?
Yeah, is it that you're putting up with it because you don't know what else to do? Because I think that's how so many toxic behaviours get normalised as well. We often think we don't want other people to hear us complaining about our jobs, about, I don't know, our relationship, about just a bad day. So we bottle it up and we don't tell anyone. But then that just breeds more of it, because you're then not only not processing that emotion, but because you're not processing it, you can't build that resilience. And to me, that goes hand in hand. Like, if you want to be more resilient to something, you have to understand why it upset you in the first place.
Yeah, I think it's hard, isn't it? Because resilience isn't easy. And from this whole conversation and from kind of learning a bit more about it recently, I thought resilience was just a good thing, but it's not straightforward. It's not easy, but it is learnable. And I think if it is learned in the right way, and I mean, I say rooted in good things, obviously you're only going to build resilience when you're becoming resilient to those not so good things. But I think it goes hand in hand with what kind of attitude you have and what your kind of outlook is. Because if you're a, like, oh, why is this happening to me person, then resilience probably isn't going to be that helpful, because you already have that, I don't know, that kind of mindset that this has been deliberately targeted towards you. Whereas if you have that mindset of, this is horrible, but like, tough times happen in life, like they do happen, how am I going to cope with this? What are my next steps? That to me is what I would see as a kind of a more positive resilience.
And I think as well, we do, I always thought, at least, like, you could only be resilient by having bad things happen to you. And if something bad happened, that meant you could be resilient, but also you were generally resilient. Whereas what I've really realized in the past couple of years is those awful experiences you might have in life can make you resilient. It's not a guarantee. You have to do the work and make the choice and push forward. But also, just because you're resilient in one area doesn't mean you are in every area. And therefore, you almost have to, like, bridge the gap a bit and go, I don't want work to be horrendous or to lose my job or something really horrendous happen with work to learn how to be resilient for that. I need to take my lessons from this other thing and see if I can apply them.
I feel like the point there, though, is that you don't have to suffer to be resilient.
Yeah.
That's like the bottom line, exactly, isn't it? And I think there's a lot more that plays into it in terms of mindset and how you cope with any challenges, because challenges don't have to be negative. Like you said, it could be change, it could be a new job, it could be moving house. Like, they're all quite exciting things. But like you said, resilience to change, like adaptability, they all play into things together. It doesn't have to be a negative experience to help you build that resilience. I think it's more how you then use your resilience going forward that is something that needs to be a bit more carefully examined, maybe.
I completely agree. I know a lot of people do talks on resilience and they like to share their experience of them being a very resilient person. And I feel like they fall into one of two camps. Like the TED talk that you shared before, I found that so helpful because it was so actionable. Mm. And I think sometimes these conversations fall into the ground of, like, I suffered X, Y, and Z and I'm now resilient. So you can be resilient. And it almost takes that standpoint of, bad things happen to me, but look how good I am. So what's your excuse? And I think when you're discussing resilience, you need to be really mindful of that, because that isn't the case. Like, someone else going through something awful does not mean that you should be resilient just because you haven't had it as bad as that.
Yeah.
It's almost flipping it on its head and going, okay, that person was able to build resilience despite this really awful situation. These are the key learning points. Let's go ahead and do them. And so much of that is rooted in mindset and positive habits and having a support network and being very honest with yourself and seeking out the help where it's needed.
Yeah, I do think that resilience probably actually plays a much bigger role in emotional intelligence than we probably kind of think of it. Because, like you said, as a society, we tend to shut ourselves off from showing emotion, but probably, like, actioning our resilience correctly is probably part of having an emotional intelligence and understanding ourselves a bit more and when we really need to flex that muscle to help us get through something.
Yeah, Emotional intelligence is something I don't think we talk about enough of generally anyway, because it's such a valuable thing and such an important thing. And I had a thought the other day about this, like, if you say to someone, oh, I've got a PT, no one would bat an eyelid. And if you reframed having therapists as being mental PTs or like mental resilience PTs, no one would bat an eyelid. But because there's such a stigma around mental health and emotional health, there's almost that huge disconnect. And actually, if we treated our emotional health like we do with our physical health, I think we would all be much better off, because we just dedicate the time to it. And I think if you can take that time to kind of assess your emotional reaction to a situation, you can then build on that and go, okay, this is how it made me feel. I understand it a bit more. How can I build that resilience so that next time maybe I don't have that emotional reaction, or maybe it doesn't make me feel as awful as it did, and I can keep moving. Even if it's very slowly, you can keep moving.
And I think there's like two things to take from that. One, like you said, it's exactly like a muscle. Like, don't expect to develop resilience overnight. Like, I don't feel like I'm anywhere near as resilient as I should be, but equally I'm a lot more aware of where I think I could be more resilient. And then the other thing is, if you are genuinely struggling and you're in a tough situation, there is so much support out there. And like Charlotte just said, it's not discussed enough, but it should be. And there are therapists, there are services, there is online help, there are phone numbers you can call if you are in a situation that you're struggling with.
Yeah. And I think it's so important that we don't, as individuals, but also as a society, think that just because someone looks fine, and because resilience is such a prized skill, we ignore someone's actual emotional well-being. Because anyone can slap a smile on their face.
Yeah, so true.
That isn't resilience. That is performance, and sometimes it's necessary. But I don't think we should prize resilience so highly that we do forget there's a human being underneath it who feels things, and it's fine to feel things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. And as always, if you have any ideas that you want to share with us or any topics that you'd like to hear us discuss in the future, please do get in contact with us in the details down in the show notes. In the meantime, we hope you have a lovely week, and we will speak to you soon. Bye.